Does it matter how soon your kids start school? Welcome to Vox Talks from the Centre for Economic Policy Research. My name is Tim Phillips. In most countries in Europe, children don't see a classroom until they're 6 or 7 years old, but some British kids are already in full-time education a few weeks after their fourth birthday. Does going to school early give them any advantage? A new piece of research uses the variation in the age at which kids start school in England to answer this question. And one of the authors, Thomas Cornelison of the University of York, is in the studio today. Thomas, welcome to Vox Talks.
Hello, Tim.
It is surprising, isn't it, that we don't yet know the best age to send kids to school. Why is this?
I think one of the problems is that every country has a slightly different policy, but within a country, policies don't usually vary. So we can't very easily compare what would have been if we had sent kids to school 1 year earlier or so, because there's very little variation. So there tends to be much more variation when we look at older ages. So, for example, compulsory schooling has been slowly increased at the upper end of schooling and secondary school, but there's little variation in the school starting age.
What sort of skills are we talking about here when we're saying, is it good for kids to start school at this age?
So I think children develop a range of important skills during that age group. So there are verbal and numerical skills, but then there are also creative skills or motor skills, physical skills that children develop in this age range. And there are different ways really to measure them. But one measurement that we had access to, among others, for example, were the teacher evaluations at the end of reception class. And they are based really on observations that teachers make of children. And they cover exactly these areas, numerical, verbal skills, how they interact with peers and teachers, and also their motor skills and their creative development.
But at this age, we're not measuring exam results, for example. They're too young for that.
Right. At this age, it's really observations of teachers in these different areas. It's not formalized exams. But our research also looks at the longer term of the development of these children. And at that stage, then later on, we will have access to exam results as well.
You mentioned before that the ages don't tend to vary within a country, but between countries, there's a huge difference. So why didn't you just get a selection of kids from the UK and a selection of kids from Sweden, for example, and compare their development?
Yeah, I think the problem there is that obviously between countries, a lot of other things are different as well. Not only the age at which primary school usually starts, but also, of course, how school is organized. Maybe also even how skills are measured, and also a lot of other institutional things that then would be confounding the estimates. That means you couldn't be certain that any differences that you would find were really due to the difference in school starting age, but they might well be due to other differences between these countries.
Instead, what you've done here is you've looked at local variations in the starting time. I didn't know there were local variations in England. It's a variation of, I guess, a few months. Is that enough variation to be able to draw conclusions from?
Yeah, so that's right. We use local variations in the school starting policy. Actually, it's much less common today. So nowadays, the most common policy of when a child enters reception class is that a child should enter by the beginning of the academic year in September. But we use basically variation that comes from the 2005-2006 academic year. So that's roughly 10 to 15 years ago. And at that time, the children that we analyze, roughly 40% of children in England lived in local authorities that operated more than one entry point into reception class.
40% at this time? I had no idea.
40% of children are in local authorities where you could enter either in September, as is a general rule now, or in the second term, which would be in January, or in the third term, which would be in April. And the rationale of that was, because it is still the case and well known, that the youngest children in class tend to do a little worse at test scores. It's sometimes called the August birth month's penalty.
Mm-hmm.
And so the rationale of these rules was to hold the youngest children a little bit back from early school entry, to hold them back by 1 or 2 terms of entry. So they would still enter in the same academic year cohort as they were due, but they wouldn't enter at the start of the school year, but they would enter in 1 or 2 terms later. And this rules usually depended on their birth months of the child. It wasn't just a choice of parents or a choice of the school, because then again, we would be worried whether they're actually comparable in terms of their family background. These rules depended really on the birth months of the children, which made it a bit more random of whether you were subject to early entry or late entry.
What kind of outcomes were you measuring here?
So in terms of the type of the effects that we look at, we are really comparing children who enter on time, so who gains a full year of reception class, comparing with children who enter, say, one term deferred. So they have one term less of reception class. They're also a little bit older at school entry. So that's the type of effect that we look at. But then, of course, what are the outcomes that we are interested in? So how does it affect outcomes? So there we have a range of measures. Again, the whole range that I mentioned earlier, cognitive test scores or teacher observations, and also non-cognitive ones. And we extend them also across time. So we look at not only effects at the end of reception class, like really close after the treatment, if you like. We also look at 2 years later at age 7, and then another few years later at age 11. It's our current follow-up period of this cohort.
And when you looked at this, what did you discover?
So what we found is that starting reception class early, as opposed to being deferred, that means gaining, for example, one term more of schooling at this early age, had a positive effect on first the cognitive scores, so the verbal and numerical skills at the very early age at age 5. And then it also had an effect on the non-cognitive skills, so how children interact with their peers, their creative development and physical development in terms of their motor skills. And the effect sizes were roughly between 5 and 10% positive effect for an additional term of schooling relative to the mean of these variables.
That's quite a large effect, isn't it?
So I think it's quite sizable. And of course, you could say if you measure the effect at just at the end of reception class and one child had one or two less terms of schooling, that's quite a big difference to their classmates. Mm. So maybe it's not that surprising that you find quite large immediate effects. But still, some people are concerned that early entry is negative and early entry hurts children's development. And I think maybe a home environment is the best place for children to be. And we have found no evidence whatsoever of negative effects of entering on time.
That's interesting. Now, looking at the longer term, did those effects then diminish as kids spent longer time at school?
Yes, so we did find that the effects on cognitive skills, such as verbal and numerical skills, they diminished over time indeed. So they got smaller by quite a bit already at age 7. And then by age 11, they almost faded out. Mm. So on cognitive test scores, the effect disappeared over time. And that is a finding that is a bit in line with some literature in early childhood education that has also found effects that level out over time in cognitive skills. But sometimes this literature tends to find more long-lasting non-cognitive skills. And that's exactly what we found too. So when we looked at non-cognitive skills such as pupil-teacher relationship and how they enjoy school at an older age, at ages 7 and 11, we still had some positive effects there of entering reception class on time.
You did find as well, didn't you, that there was a larger effect for kids from disadvantaged backgrounds?
That's true, yes. And that's again that chimes with the literature in this area, which is often the case that early childhood education is found to be more effective for children from low socioeconomic backgrounds. And we found that as well, particularly for boys. So we found that boys from low socioeconomic backgrounds had the largest effects. And actually for girls, effects were a little bit more uniform across the family background distribution, but especially for boys, we had these larger effects. And what that means is that actually early schooling can contribute to closing the gap between high and low socioeconomic background children.
If these effects disappear over time, does it really matter?
Well, I think there's still a case that it's an important thing to know, because even if the effect levels out, which was the case for our cognitive skills at age 11, you still would want to make sure not to take any decisions before age 11 that affect the children's long-run future, such as maybe tracking them by ability or deciding on their secondary school. If you take such decisions too early, when they are still affected by the disadvantage of having entered later, then you might perpetuate the effect of that. And then, as I said, our non-cognitive effects last a little bit longer, so up to the end of our observation window, so not all the effects leveled out. And it could actually be that some of these earlier cognitive disadvantages could have led to some of the non-cognitive skills, because if a child has the experience of lagging behind some of their classmates in terms of their cognitive skills, maybe that has some negative repercussions on their attitude towards school later on.
Because it has been quite controversial in English schooling, certainly the amount of decisions that are taken about children at an early age. There are a lot of people who think that we decide too much about kids too early, don't we?
Yeah, that's right.
You've used these variations in local guidelines for schools. As you say, there is much less variation now than there was 12, 13 years ago when you were looking at this. Can we make a decision as to what the best policy is? It sounds like the best policy is to get kids into school early.
Yes, that's right. So our results would suggest that the on-time school start in September into the academic year the child is due, we couldn't detect any negative effects of that. And on the contrary, there were positive effects of on-time entry. So we would recommend that as the best policy when we compare it to deferment by one or two terms.
And it sounds like overwhelmingly that has been adopted as
yes.
the best policy.
Yes, so interestingly, that's what the system has gravitated towards over the years. So this is now the most common policy everywhere. Parents are still concerned about especially this August birth month's penalty. Our research doesn't contradict that. So our research is in line with the finding that the youngest one in class still has some disadvantage compared to their classmates. So we are not disputing that. We're just saying that deferring by one or two terms isn't an answer to this problem.
And for concerned parents of these August babies, for example, what advice could you give to them?
One advice would be that deferment just by one or two terms isn't the answer.
You're not solving anything with that.
No, because you lose basically some schooling, which is valuable. It could be a little bit more worthwhile to think about delay by a whole academic year, which would mean the child would enter in a year group 1 year later than it was due to enter.
Yeah.
And some people are advocating this as a solution. From the individual child's point of view, that might be positive because you don't lose any schooling. You still enter a full year, but you gain an age advantage compared to classmates. So that's a different policy than the one that we evaluated. And you could think that would be more likely to have positive effects, but it creates some other problems in the classroom potentially, because now you're adding older kids to the next cohort. And so the kids that would have been the oldest otherwise now is a little bit younger. And so you may have a negative knock-on effect on other children. Plus, teachers have to teach to a wider age range in a classroom. So it is ambiguous as well, but that's not a policy that we've analysed in detail.
How far can you push these conclusions? Can you say that kids could get the benefit from going to school even younger? Or can we say maybe Sweden should revise its policy and start sending kids to school at four?
I think what I maybe would be comfortable drawing as a generalisable conclusion is that it's possible to have a universal schooling system at age 4 to 5, and that children can uniformly benefit from that system. So it should be possible to introduce this in another country. But I think then one has to take a lot of care in the details of how schooling for this age group is organized, because obviously it needs to be age appropriate. And if you would just take the same school as it is set up currently for children at age 6, and you would apply the same to children aged 4 or 5, you would risk of...
That would not be a comfortable environment for a four-year-old. Yes.
So if you would want to extrapolate this to other countries, I think you should have a close look of how the UK organises reception class.
Yes, because reception class, for people who are listening to this who are not British, then reception class is not like school with rows of desks, is it?
Right, that's true. So it is very educational compared to other childcare environments maybe that people in other countries are used to. So it has a very educational setup, but children are quite free in choosing their activities and they don't sit at desks basically still the whole day. So it's not this type of school. And therefore, if you wanted to export this system, I think you would need to look at how it is organized. And I think the same would be true in extrapolating it to age 3. Then you would still want to think about how should we age appropriately organize a universal system at age 3.
You grew up in Germany, yeah?
Yes, that's right, yeah.
What age did you go to school?
I went to school at age 6, but I think I turned 7 during that first school year. In Germany, there's a rule that if you would be among the relatively youngest in your cohort, there is a lot of flexibility for parents to choose delay by a full academic year. And parents' decision is actually aided through what is called a school entry examination. So a child that is at the age of being able to enter school would attend a visit at basically a pediatrician who assesses a child exactly for motor skills, for how they interact with as adults and as children, and they would give a recommendation of whether they think the child is school ready.
And you live in the UK now, you have children.
Yes, that's right.
How old are they?
The oldest one is just about to enter reception class.
Yes.
I think it is organized quite well here, the very age-appropriate educational setting. I think in Germany, children at this age group have a less educational surroundings in terms of having a more play-based ideology around childcare at this age. I think it works quite well here.
I was one of those August babies, so I started school when I was 4 years and probably about 2 weeks old.
And you started on time?
Well, I don't think there was a choice in those days. This is going back a while. I can't really remember, though. I was 4 years old, and clearly it worked out fine for me. Other people might disagree. Thomas, thank you very much.
You're welcome.
For concerned parents and interested economists, there's a Vox column about this. It lays all of this research out. It's called The Benefits of Starting School Early, and the authors are Thomas and Christian Dustman. And if you're looking for the full paper, that's called Early School Exposure, Test Scores and Non-Cognitive Outcomes, more formal title there. And that's just published in the American Economic Journal, Economic Policy. Same authors. Are you going to be doing more research on this topic? Because as we were saying, there's plenty that we don't know about this.
I have done some other research on Germany as well, and that's an area I'm still generally interested in. So I might well do some more research in this area, but I haven't currently a project working on this.
And generally speaking, is there a lot of research into what ages is good to start school, how we should be taking kids through school?
So I think, for example, in the UK, the IFS has done quite a bit of work on this as well. So there's quite an interesting summary on the IFS webpage. It is entitled, When Should Summer-Born Children Start School? It's an IFS observation, which summarizes nicely the IFS research on this topic. And it also addresses the August birth month's penalty and deferment by one or two terms versus delay by a full academic year, which maybe concerned parents could be interested in these questions.
Great, a very interesting topic. Thank you very much. Next week on Vox Talks, the true cost of the emission scandal.
And we estimate that those 600,000 additional emission-cheating cars cost 38,000 babies to be born with low birth weight.
You won't want to miss that, so subscribe on your podcast platform or check out our archive at www.voxeu.org/vox-talks.